Good afternoon. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I CRS. The time is 2:00 and the date is January 4th, 2017. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Room at 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. The Title Setting Board today consists of myself, Suzanne Steyer, Deputy Secretary of State, on behalf of Secretary of State Wayne Williams, and Sharon Eubanks, designee of Director of Office of Legislative Legal Services, Dan Carton, and Glenn Roper, Assistant Solicitor General, designee of Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman. Today we are meeting to consider a rehearing on one title setting. And the way the rehearing is generally conducted is the board will hear from the proponents and ensure that they're here, and then we will have questions for the two petitioners that have filed for a motion for rehearing. Let's go ahead first and have the proponents come up and just introduce yourselves and let us know that you're here.
Daniel Hayes, Golden, Colorado.
Julianne Page, Wheat Ridge, Colorado.
Okay. And have you both had a chance to review the motions for rehearing that have been submitted?
Yes, we have.
Okay. Do you have any comment on those? I'll ask you again after the petitioners come up. But
do you have any comments now on it?
If you have any comments you want to make now, just based on the written motions, that'd be fine. We can take those now.
Well, he was referring to how county residents would have rights over home rule counties,
which he,
or home rule cities. Is that something I should discuss now?
You can, sure. As to the single subject, or?
Yes.
Okay. And which motion are you referring to, Mr. Gruskin's or Mr. Dunn's? Or both?
I'm going to go ahead and look that over.
You're going to look it over? Okay. I'll go ahead and take comments from them, and then we'll hear from you. Mr. Dunn, you want to go first?
Thank you, and good afternoon. Hopefully we can get everybody out of here with the snow. I note that the proponents wore much better shoe wear than the rest of us for a day like today. So I thought Mr. Gruskin and I have had a chance to talk, and hopefully we can make this efficient as possible without being too duplicative. So I thought what I would do is address the single subject issue and then let Mr. Gruskin do the same, if that works.
That'd
for,
be fine.
For
sure.
You all, and then I'm not sure if you want to go to title, if necessary after that, or abstract, or how you want to do it.
Let's do single subject first, and then then we'll see how that goes.
Right. So for the record, Jason Dunn on behalf of objector Michael Kopp. As you read in our motion, we believe that the measure has at least four separate subjects that bear no necessary connection to each other. And I think, foremost, the primary purpose of the measure is the 1% growth limitation on the Front Range counties. That's an affirmative limitation on growth, as opposed to Section 1 of the measure that creates the new constitutional right to place housing growth limitations, which, while a new provision in law, I guess is what I would call passive, in that it would require voters in a particular area to take advantage of that right to institute some sort of growth limitation. So, and this also sort of as a prelude to our title argument that the 1% limitation is the primary purpose of the measure, and that the other provisions are disconnected subjects. So as I said, in addition to that, Section 1 of the measure creates a new constitutional right of initiative and referendum in local voters to limit or ban housing growth. Obviously, it's very different than the 1% limitation on the Front Range counties, both from a geographic perspective, obviously, but from a legal perspective as well. The constitutional right of initiative and referendum on a statewide basis is essentially a new right given to voters versus the 1% limitation, which is a change in policy for the state. And obviously, voters who may support a 1% limit on Front Range counties, where most of the population and growth has been in Colorado, may not wish to see growth limitations in rural counties in Colorado, and may be torn between supporting one versus the other. Third subject, I think, is the fundamental change to Colorado's home rule structure. And I think it's important to read real quickly from Article 20 of the Constitution. This is Section 6. And it says, the people of each city or town of this state having a population of 2,000 inhabitants are hereby vested with, and they shall always have, power to make, amend, add to, or replace the charter of said city or town, which shall be its organic law and extend to all its local and municipal matters. Such charter and the ordinances made pursuant thereto in such matters shall supersede within the territorial limits and other jurisdiction of said city or town any law of the state in conflict therewith. And I think that's important to read because that shows the fundamental nature of the home rule right in cities and counties, which are fundamentally altered by the second section, second sentence in Section 1 of the measure. It fundamentally changes the relationship between local governments and counties or municipalities and counties that's really been in place. I don't know if it goes back to the founding of the state, but certainly back a century or more in Colorado and that relationship. I also think it's important to note that this is not just about a narrow interpretation of housing growth limitations. So because the 1% number is in the measure, at least I initially tended to think of the right of initiative and limitations on growth in terms of a numerical limitation that voters could say a 1% limitation or a 2% limitation. But after thinking about it, I realize it's a much broader limitation and a much broader grant of authority to voters to impose these limitations in the home rule context. So for example, voters in a county could put a measure on the ballot to impose limitations on municipalities within the county, home rule municipalities within the county, saying, well, you can grow, but 20% of your new housing stock has to be affordable housing, to relate back to an earlier version of this measure. Or they could say you have to have certain setbacks, or they could say housing has to be limited to 2,500 square feet because we don't want mega mansions or McMansions in our county. So it really gives counties the authority to rewrite the development code of home rule municipalities within the county. And that clearly is a different and unnecessary provision, different in terms of the 1% limit and the constitutional right of initiative or referendum. And lastly, I think, at least of our four subjects, is the change to the initiative process itself. Standing alone, the measure could grant the right of initiative and referendum to the voters, putting aside the single subject issues, and not have any provision regarding the initiative process because that's already covered in statute in Colorado. So this provision is not only a change to that process, but it's an unnecessary addition. And to steal a citation from Mr. Gruskin, if you look at 2001, 2002, number 43 and 45, that talks about, it's a Supreme Court case where they looked at changes to the initiative petition process, and they said that that procedural change was a separate and distinct subject from substantive changes to the rights regarding what type of measures can be amended through the initiative process, and they ruled that they were not compliant with the single subject requirement. And if you look specifically at the procedural requirements, it limits, at least I believe as I interpret it, it limits challenges to the petition form and the signatures to a single challenge. And that's obviously very unusual. In Colorado, anybody can challenge an initiative or a referendum through whatever process is in place. This measure limits it to a single challenger. So it's a race to the courthouse, so to speak. If you're not the first person, then you have no right to challenge an initiative or petition related to housing growth under this measure. In addition, it appears that the measure eliminates any right of appeal under either of those decisions. So in section, 4C, relating to challenges to the form and content, the last provision says an expedited judicial decision for such a challenge shall be final. Now, if that's a challenge to the clerk, then it eliminates any right of appeal. And in section D, right below that, the last section says, recertification shall not exceed 2 weeks and shall be final. So again, eliminates any right of appeal. So these are substantial changes to the initiative process, and they're substantive in nature and not, again, connected to any other of the subjects outlined in the measure. So I'll pause there. Those are what we see as the four distinct subjects in the measure. I'll answer any questions, or I can turn it over to Mr. Gruskin to talk about single subject.
Anyone have any questions?
Mr. Dunn, other than the language you quoted from Section 6 of Article 20, are there any other specific provisions of Article 20 that you think are implicated by this measure?
Is that a hint? Is there?
No.
No, I think, I mean, generally Article 20 outlines the right of home rule governance for cities and towns over 2,000 inhabitants.
I'm just trying to figure out if you have a specific concern, or it's just that some of the residual power of the home rule municipality would be taken away.
I would say it's more than the residual. I would say the home rule relationship itself is constitutional. It's a creature of our state constitution, and it grants rights to municipalities to assume all the powers of the state that, I don't want to get into all the case law, but all the powers of the state that aren't otherwise conflicted. And it fundamentally alters that relationship that has been unaltered for all these years. And as I said, it's not just the ability to put a 1% or 2% growth limitation on it. It really is the ability to dictate to a home rule municipality by another local government, by a county, a creature of state law, how their development should occur.
Thank you.
I do have a question. Sure. Mr. Dunn, are you aware that the proponent, Mr. Hayes, submitted a proposal back in the 2005-2006 cycle that was very similar to this measure, at least in terms of the provisions in subsection 1 and 2, in terms of the limits, that was the title board set a title. There was a motion for rehearing. It went up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court upheld the title set by the title board.
Right, I'm familiar with it.
Would you be familiar enough to distinguish between that and this one as to why?
Right, I'd have to I haven't compared the two recently. I did when the original version of the measure was first filed, but as I recall, the latter provisions, and I could be wrong about this, but I think the latter provisions with regard to the initiative process
is not
included.
But in terms of the arguments you make regarding the general process established in subsection 1 for other local governments to impose growth limits versus the specific limit set forth in subsection 2, those provisions are fairly similar. And so in terms of the arguments you made based on those provisions, I was wondering.
Right. And I don't recall if the original measure included the second sentence of section 1 regarding the county's right to impose, the sort of the home rule provision, as I refer to it. I don't think that did, but I could be wrong about that.
It did allow
the home rule,
for a county to impose a county-wide.
Okay. So I'd have to go back and compare the two.
That's fine. Yeah. And I'll ask Mr. Gruskin the same question.
There's nothing else? All right. Thanks.
Nope. All right.
Madam Chair, members of the title board, my name is Mark Gruskin. I'm appearing on behalf of the objector, Mr. Smith. And I'd be happy to review the single subject challenges that we made in our motion for rehearing. Likewise, be happy to answer the questions that I believe are forthcoming. Let me first, though, say that the question that was asked was, is there any specific provision in Article 20 that is implicated by this measure? And I'd suggest to you that there are two. Number one, subsection D gives to municipalities, home rule municipalities, total control over their election process. That control is, by this measure, removed as to this class of measures. And in fact, it becomes those elections can't have any effect in light of the preeminence of the countywide decision. And therefore, there is that specific provision. In addition, the decision in Initiative 2001-2002, number 43, identifies land use and zoning as protected decisions for home rule municipalities under Article 20. And therefore, without a specific provision, nonetheless, it is clear that Article 20 reserves that set of decision-making for home rule municipalities. It is yanked away from home rule municipalities by this measure. So let me talk a little bit about the various subjects. Mr. Dunn is correct that there are a set of procedures that relate to a certain category of initiatives that are dictated here, and they are fairly exhaustive in subsection 4, but that is not the only set of issues, subjects that are addressed here. Number one, there is no county right of initiative. Doesn't exist, as the board knows well. That is created here for purposes of addressing growth, specific growth issues. That is a change in the fundamental nature of the county as a political subdivision of the state, which has only that authority that is granted to it by the state, and therefore that is its own subject. We are giving lawmaking authority to countywide electorates in order to bind all of the municipalities, notwithstanding their home rule or statutory nature. That is a fundamental shift in what, in how government operates at the county level. And the Colorado appellate courts have rejected the notion that, except as created by the General Assembly, there is such a thing as a county initiative. And therefore, to the extent that it is now part of the organic law of the Constitution, that is its own subject. Secondly, to the extent that there is a transfer of authority from municipal electorates to county electorates, that is a fundamental change. And as suggested earlier, that implicates Article 20, but it isn't solely the issue. The question is whether or not the right of initiative as protected by Article 5, Section 1, Paragraph 9, which is all-encompassing, having had that now removed, that all-encompassing power is taken away from municipal voters, whether or not that isn't, in fact, a second subject. And I would argue to you that, in fact, it is. As I indicated, and as is implied by the number 43 decision, the whole notion of growth, which is a function of land use and zoning decisions, has always been reserved to municipal voters. It's their community. Take take Arapahoe County, for example. Now, the citizens of Aurora have a say in the type of growth that's going to occur in Littleton. And you can go on and on in terms of the various counties that are going, where countywide voters are going to change the decision-making, the growth patterns, the economics of municipalities that have literally no geographic nexus to them other than the fact that they're within the same county. As a function of that, the fact that residential housing growth is being shifted because either it is being decided at a county level or it's subject to the new statewide limit as set in this measure suggests that there has been a change in the power and the authority of local electorates. As we point out in our motion, in addition to that, there is a statewide process for these initiatives and referenda with a specific growth limit on residential housing in the 10 named counties. As Mr. Dunn explained, and I won't repeat his point, but we make it too, the fact that you've got those two very different things at issue here are important. And not only are they important, they are distinct. They are distinct because it is one thing to say that there's a statewide limit it's quite another thing to say that we're going to create a different standard. And what is particularly important here is that there will be a misleading of voters in that this measure is about creating a right of initiative and referenda so that countywide voters can determine growth, except that for 2 years, the 10 named counties don't get to exert that power. And therefore, you have a statewide authority, you have an exemption as to the 10 named counties, and it is confusing and it is misleading to say that, in fact, this is about initiatives and referenda that will control growth, because, in fact, that's not what this measure even permits. There is no local determination in those first 2 years. It is a statewide decision. As I pointed out, there are procedures and standards for a certain class of initiative. Mr. Dunn addressed, and we would reiterate, as suggested earlier, that this is changing home rule control over certain municipal elections. Again, you've got a set of essentially municipal decisions relating to growth and land use and zoning, and you also have a certain level of decision-making relating to elections that's been reserved to those home rule communities that is now removed. You've got the 2-year mandatory growth limit, which is, as Mr. Dunn pointed out, separate from, because it relates only to those 10 counties. You have the actual ban on the right of initiative dealing with growth in those 10 counties for a period of time, as well as the general applicability of other state laws. Not to preempt, but to answer Ms. Eubanks' question, yes, there is another decision. It is not parallel to this one because it does not deal with the specific provisions, even as to paragraphs 1 and 2. Most notably, I would suggest to you that the issue raised by the last sentence in subparagraph 2, which limits the right of initiative or referendum for the 2-year period, wasn't raised as part of the single subject challenge. And it is very much part of our single subject challenge because there is and there isn't the right of initiative as to these 10 counties for at least those 2 years, as opposed to the rest of the state. That was not my best sentence ever. What I meant to say was there are these processes for the balance of the state, but for that 2-year period, it doesn't apply to the 10 named counties. And so we would suggest to you that the earlier decision, to the extent that it addresses precisely the same language and precisely the same legal concerns, may be found to be effective as stare decisis, but we don't believe that that decision does in fact bind the board as to all arguments raised. And with that, if you have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Just to follow up, in terms of the arguments that you did present in the former matter, you did make an argument regarding the restriction of the constitutional power of elected local officials, including home rule officials. And the court obviously didn't buy that argument. And so, I mean, it has the tie-in to there was a home rule concern as well as for all elected officials, and yet the Supreme Court did not agree with you on that basis. Is that correct?
Actually, I was counsel of record only after the decision had basically been arrived at, so I wasn't involved in that case except to take over for counsel who fortunately passed away during the pendency of the case. So I can't argue about the briefing or the actual title board process because I wasn't involved.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you, members.
Do you want to respond?
Yes. Good afternoon, Mark Kruska. He's been an opposing attorney to everything I've done in the last 20 years. First of all, the countywide measure, I've lived in Jefferson County virtually all my life. The only way to approach growth is countywide. And in Arvada, they passed a 10%, you have to get 10% of the signatures of all their registered voters, which is about 12, 13,000. It's almost impossible. I don't think they've had a single initiative since they passed that.
they're made up of, I know, most of their city council are lawyers that have worked for various home builders. They do what they please. Virtually all that growth in the Rocky Flats area, there's about 10,000 houses coming out of the ground that Arvada's got going. It's costing the county residents.
Right. Well, I mean, the merits of your proposal are not.
The idea of county imposing power over home rule cities. Most of the voters are from Lakewood, Arvada, Wheat Ridge. They're all home rule cities. So the voters of the county, majority of them, are from home rule cities. They have a right to protect the school costs that they're.
Right. But the merits of your proposal, again, are not really up for debate. I mean, if they were, we could debate whether allowing only one challenge to a form is even constitutional. But that's not something that the board considers. We don't consider whether your proposal is constitutional. We don't consider whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. I mean, at this point, we're only considering whether that inclusion of home rule creates a separate subject, whether the inclusion of these initiative and referendum sections create a second subject. I mean, why you put them all together, that's really for you. And that's something to sell to the voters, but that's not something the board considers.
Well, when I was working on the car towing, Mark Ruskin challenged us in Lakewood, for example. There is an endless number of appeals that they can make at this time. That's why something needed to be done. You can't put something on the ballot in a local government without expecting appeals that can go on for years. There's no protection. There used to be. But this General Assembly relieved the frivolous clause from these local. So you can be appealed for, there's no limit to it. So that's why that had to be addressed. Also, they keep referring to all these zoning matters that could be done. There's nothing in this proposal that talks about zoning. It just says proposals to regulate growth are, you know, that's what the initiative and referendum is about.
Okay.
As far as the challenges to the petition, again, these can go on forever. I've never seen anything where there was more than one challenge to the form of a petition. That has to be taken before a judge. He decides whether the challenge is good or not and makes a decision. I don't see any reason why there should have to be another judge look at it. Same way with the sufficiency. One challenge for the sufficiency. I don't know that the state allows several challenges. Once one's been made and the Secretary of State decides that it's sufficient, then it goes ahead to the voters. So why should local governments
My legal budget would disagree with that. But
all right.
Point taken. any questions?
No.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess as I alluded to, I think there may be some fundamental questions about whether you can do an initiative process this way and whether that is going to be constitutional. But again, I don't think that's an issue for the board. And the fact is that the last time the Supreme Court affirmed this title, there was language about growth limitations, home rule, and initiative and referendum. Now, it didn't get down to the details of what the initiative and referendum were going to look like, but it certainly referred to the initiative and referendum. And so I think I'm still at the same place that I was at the last meeting, which is that this still contains a single subject. You know, again, not sure how artfully it does it, but I don't think that specifying some of the things in initiative and referendum create a second subject when the whole initiative and referendum idea was laid out last time.
And I'm of the same mindset. Yes, there are these different components of the measure in terms of establishing a process for all the other counties not specifically set out in subsection 2. It imposes a limit on those specific governments in subsection 2 for 2 years, and then they tie into the same process. Yes, it establishes a right of initiative at the county level. It has procedural provisions regarding the challenges. It has home rule implications, but all of these are necessarily and properly connected to the imposition of a growth limit. And so I see that as being a single subject, and I would, when we get to that point, would move to deny the motions for rehearings on single subject grounds.
Do you have any comments?
I don't have any. Just briefly, I would I would grant the motion for rehearing. I think it does have two subjects with respect to the specific cities and counties that are highlighted. Now, unfortunately, I'm not familiar with the 2005-2006 case that Sharon brought up. So potentially, if I were to read that, I would change my view. But since there'll be a majority anyway,
I do agree with Mr. Gruskin's description that the arguments raised in that matter regarding single subject were different arguments necessarily than raised in the motions for rehearing before us today.
Yeah. Well, I would grant the motion for rehearing. I'm not too worried about not being familiar with that case, given that there's a majority on the other side. So. And I agree with Suzanne, there could be some due process concerns with respect to the challenges to the petition insufficiency, but I don't think that independently creates a second subject. Again, my concern is with the difference between subsections 1 and 2. So I would grant.
Okay. Want to make the motion?
You want to go ahead and do the motions now?
Sure.
Okay.
For that part, and then we'll move on to the next.
Right. In regard to the motions for rehearing on number 4, in regard to the single subject, I would move that we deny the motions for rehearing on those grounds.
Second. All those in favor? Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. So that takes us to the title. And Mr. Dunn, did you have an order or? Is Mr. Gruskin doing that one? Okay. Mr. Gruskin, you want to?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. I didn't realize that Mr. Dunn was pointing at me.
It's more of a shrug.
I think that the points that we would make as to, and can we limit this conversation just to the accuracy of the title? And I know that
Sure. You've
got staff here to address the fiscal impact statement. The measure itself says that the county may uniformly restrict growth within the county. But that obviously is permissive rather than mandatory, and it would seem to me that if it is permissive, then to the extent that the county may uniformly restrict growth, it may also non-uniformly restrict growth, and that the title should indicate that there is no requirement that the limitations on growth be countywide or be applicable by jurisdiction or anything else. It could be subject to the political whim or some sort of specific growth plan or any other element. And therefore, it seems to me that the fact that this is wildly open-ended in terms of how the county is going to apply growth limits ought to be reflected in the title. I would think that that would be relevant for voters. I would think that the title as it exists doesn't suggest that. It simply says the county voters are permitted to uniformly restrict growth.
You don't think that's covered in the next sentence when it says, including all or parts of local governments?
Honestly, I know that the board struggled as to how to include that phrase in that sentence. I don't really know what that means, because it is qualified, or it seeks to qualify, uniformly within the county. And I thought, actually, that what that phrase referred to were local governments that spanned into another county. And so if that's not what it means, then I'd say, no, it doesn't indicate that, because that was not what I took from that phrase, either based upon reading the initiative or upon hearing the proponents speak at the first title board meeting. So, no, I don't believe that that gets you there.
Does the word permitting, I mean, in terms of that it's permitting county voters, it's not requiring, it's permitting, which seems permissive.
Yes, but that seems to qualify whether or not they use the right of initiative or referendum, rather than whether or not the use of the referendum is uniform or non-uniform within the county.
What if it was uniformly within the county or parts of local,
Well, in terms of that statement in subsection 1, I mean, right now, as I understand it, counties fall within the general purview of the first sentence of subsection 1, where it talks about the electors of any of these local governments reserve the right to limit housing growth within their boundaries. And then I would argue that the second sentence, because usually a county would only be voting on things within the unincorporated portions of the county, that the second sentence allows them to impose it countywide throughout all the local governments, including municipalities. And that's the distinction between the first sentence and the second sentence. And that's, I don't view the second sentence establishing the right for the county to do within unincorporated. I mean, it's taking us the authority granted in the first sentence a step further. And I thought that's what we were trying to reflect in the title, that in addition to what a county can do to themselves, which would be the unincorporated portions, they have the authority, if they choose to exercise that authority, to go further. I mean, all of one is optional. I mean, it's discretionary. It's permissive. They have the authority to do it, but only if they choose to utilize the process that it is established. Are you seeing it differently than I?
I read that to allow the county to exercise the right of initiative in a uniform manner, but also to exercise it in a non-uniform manner. And therefore, the county can impose growth limits as to any jurisdiction contained within the county in whatever fashion the county chooses. And I think that that is the necessary reading, to the extent that I agree with you about sentence number one, that grants all electors within all political subdivisions the right to do this. But where the county chooses to do it, the county can do it uniformly. If the intent was to allow the county only to apply a uniform growth limit throughout its jurisdiction, that's what the sentence would say. But it doesn't say that. That a county can pick and choose where to apply a growth limit under the second sentence that you quoted. And the title doesn't communicate that.
You're reading the second sentence as saying, for example, the county could pick a particular city within that county and impose a growth limitation only on that city? I'm not sure I read it that way.
A electors throughout a county may elect to limit housing growth. May elect to limit housing growth uniformly in all governments. But if they may elect to do so, then they may also elect not to do so in terms of the uniformity of that particular growth limit.
I'm not sure I read it that way. I don't know that that power is granted here. I mean, the way I was reading it is that the first sentence says they can limit it within their own, you know, unincorporated area. And then the second sentence to say they additionally have the reserved right to limit housing growth in all areas of the county if they do it uniformly.
There's, I guess the way I read it is there's no limitation in the first sentence that the county's ability to exercise the right of limiting residential housing growth has to be done in all unincorporated area, for instance. I think under this measure, the county has a superseding authority over any jurisdiction within it.
Sorry, are you saying that's granted by the first sentence or it comes from some other source?
I think that once you read the first sentence and the second sentence, the county now has the right of initiative, and it can do it uniformly if it so chooses. But that means it can also do it non-uniformly if it so chooses. And it,
does it mean that?
Well, I'm sorry?
Why does it mean that?
Well, because if it may do it uniformly, it may also do it non-uniformly.
Or it may just not do it.
Or it may not do it. You're right. There are three options.
Why is there necessarily a middle ground? I mean, I read it to say you can either do it or you can not do it. That's what's permissive. The permissive is either do it uniformly or don't do it at all.
Well, and had the drafters intended, had the drafters written it that way, because if they had written it, if the county elects to impose a residential growth limit, that growth limit shall apply uniformly across the county. But that's not what it says.
Well,
I mean, I think it does. It just doesn't say it that artfully. It says may elect to limit housing growth uniformly. I mean, I think that's the same thing. It doesn't have the only uniformly, but it doesn't grant them the power to do it piecemeal either.
But they've got the right in the first sentence to exercise the initiative in any fashion that they see fit. In any fashion that they see fit. There's no limitation in the first sentence. There's no requirement in the first sentence that if you are a home rule jurisdiction, for instance, that it has to be uniform within your municipality. You could do it in a portion of the municipality. And the language in the title indicates that it could be all or part of the local government within the county. So how does that language not allow either a home rule municipality or a county to engage in limitations that apply to specific portions of the jurisdiction?
I think home rule can already do that. I mean, they could zone something no growth and put it on the ballot and do it piecemeal. I think this is just saying a county can do it uniformly, but I don't know.
Mr. Gruskin, in terms of your reading of the two sentences together, am I understanding you correctly that in terms of the second sentence where it talks about imposing a growth limit uniformly in all local governments, you don't think all local governments includes the county? Because perhaps they've done something differently pursuant to the first sentence of subsection 1? I mean, it talks about limiting growth uniformly in all local governments. Well, the county is a local government, and all the municipalities would be a local government, and so I'm just trying to.
and I'm not disputing that there's that under that sentence, the county could do it uniformly. That applies across the board to all of the jurisdictions that are listed in the first sentence.
Right.
But because there is no only in there, that it can only apply that limitation if it's going to be countywide uniformly across the other jurisdictions. It may also do it non-uniformly. Otherwise, may must mean must or shall. And that's not the language that the proponents used.
What if we just took out the word uniformly and said permitting county voters by initiative and referendum to limit housing growth within the county? I mean, does that solve the issue?
I'm not sure that that's an accurate description. I think I just have to disagree with Mr. Gruskin's interpretation. I view the second sentence that a county has the authority to exercise in its discretion the imposition of a growth limit uniformly in all local governments. And if they choose not to exercise that authority, there somehow isn't some other default authority. I mean, which I think you're arguing that there's somehow they could do something non-uniformly. And I just don't see that. But
well, I think, yeah. I mean, I guess I understand what you're saying about the first sentence is very broad. And I'm not sure the second sentence necessarily limits the first sentence. And so if the first sentence is that an elector of every city, county, local, county, whether statutory and home rule, has the right to limit it by initiative and referendum, then that implies they have the right to limit it however they want by initiative and referendum. And then the second sentence almost appears explanatory. I mean, just that extends also to counties.
But if it is just explanatory, then it seems to me it's kind of surplusage, right?
Right.
I
guess that's what I'm wondering. That's what you're arguing, isn't it? That the second sentence really doesn't have a lot of meaning because the first sentence already swallowed everything up?
Well, the first sentence is absolute authority. I think I'm just parroting your statement.
Yeah.
The first sentence is absolute authority to county voters among other voters to do whatever they want.
Right.
And then the second sentence says it may be uniform, but the title as it exists suggests that the only county vote would be one that would impose a uniform across the county limit, and that's not accurate.
Yeah.
I don't read it that way. I don't read the first sentence as granting the county the right to non-uniformly limit housing growth across. So I view the second sentence as adding an additional right. In fact, it says this right is further reserved on a countywide basis. Just my reading of it, it's adding an additional ability to limit housing growth, but it must be done uniformly across the county.
So let me just suggest one other thing, and I understand your point. The words without legislative inhibition suggest to me anyway that there are no limits in terms of any other restriction or requirement on the exercise of that authority, which would allow a county, if it so chose, to take the western half of the county and impose a housing limit and leave the eastern half to grow however it wanted or the jurisdictions within which. So to my mind, the verbiage of without legislative inhibition has to suggest that that power is absolute in the first sentence.
Yeah, and I guess I'm at the point that I agree with that, and I think it is also quite likely that a county would take a certain portion, say around an airport or wherever there's high development, and decide they can't get it zoned that way through the county commissioners or whatever, and so they're going to put it on the ballot and limit growth in one area of the county, essentially rezone something. So I don't think it, and I don't think they're prohibited necessarily by the second sentence from doing just that, because I think the first sentence does give them very broad powers.
You have a reaction to removing uniformly, if that would resolve your concern?
Yeah, I think that taking out uniformly does address that concern.
I think Sharon didn't believe that's an accurate statement.
Yeah,
so
I would oppose doing that because I read the two sentences differently. While I don't disagree that the authority granted under the first sentence is very broad, I think the second sentence says that if a county wants to impose a limit on other local governments located within the county, it has to be uniform within all the governments within that county. And so to me, there's a restriction there. That means for the county itself as well as everyone else in the county. And so to me, uniformly is an important concept because that's the only authority that that county has over other local governments in terms of imposing a growth limit on municipalities within the county. That's just how I read the sentence.
So you're the, and I think do you want the word in or out?
I didn't know if someone else or the proponent
Did you want to say something?
Jason Dunn again. So just on that point, since no one else raised it, maybe I'm missing something, but in the measure itself, that clause says the right is further reserved on a countywide basis, whereby electors throughout a county may elect to limit housing growth uniformly in all local governments and any part of such. And I think that's conveyed somewhat in the where it says parts of local government in the measure. But I agree with Mr. Gruskin, and I incorporate his arguments into ours, but I think it's clearly intended just, in fact, I think Ms. Stair sort of made our single subject for argument for us when you said that a county could impose its own rezoning policies on a local government because the local government won't do what the county wants or vice versa. So you can very well imagine a scenario in El Paso County where they want to limit growth in around the city of Colorado Springs, but they want to allow monuments to is that in El Paso County? I think so.
It is.
but they want to push growth there. So it makes sense from a policies perspective that you'd want the county perhaps to have that right. But I think I don't know what else the and any part of such means. And maybe you discussed that last time, but other than saying when you do something, it has to be uniform across whatever area you do it, but you don't have to do it countywide. So you could say, well, we're going to do it in Colorado Springs, but not in Monument. Or you say Colorado Springs and Black Forest or whatever, but not Monument. But where you do impose it, it has to be uniform. So I think taking out uniformly does help. I have other title concerns, but I want to address that one specifically before you moved on.
My response to that is if there was an or after all local governments or any part of such, I might agree with your interpretation, but the fact that it says and any part of such, that language is covering municipalities that are located in part in a county. So in terms of a municipality that crosses county boundaries, which, you know, other than the metro area, I can't give you an example right now, but that's what I think because it says and any part of such, referring back to all local governments, it means that anything that's totally included within the county or any part that's in that county, it's uniform every place within the county. That's just how I read it.
And to follow up on that, I agree, and particularly because on the other side of the comma phrase, it says, you know, if you take that out, it says, and any part of such within such county. So I read it the same way as Sharon.
Yeah, and I read it that way too. I just am at the point where I'm not sure the second sentence matters all that much. So,
I think it matters a lot.
Yeah,
and that's
I
think it's an important component of the measure. It needs to be in the title, and it needs to have the word uniformly in the title. That's at least my position.
I guess the question is whether the first sentence, when reserving the right to a county, does that enable them to limit growth just in the county area, the unincorporated county area, or also within any municipalities encompassed within the county?
No, I think it definitely lets you do it within a municipality in the county. I think the issue is whether that's got to be uniform or whether they can piecemeal it, you know, in such a way that I can limit it around the airport, but I'm not going to limit it elsewhere, you know, whatever that may be. Did you have a comment?
Yes, I did say local county, and while there might be some confusion, I defined it as the statutory or home rule part of the county.
That's not the confusion. The confusion is whether you could do just the east side, not the west side.
Of the county?
Yes.
Well, in section one, the electors of every city, town, city and county, or local county reserve the right.
Right, but do you have to limit the growth uniformly throughout the county, or can you do the east half and not the west half?
I see.
And while I agree that this first sentence doesn't limit that authority in any way, I would still make the argument that counties under the first sentence can only deal with unincorporated areas. And so if they choose to do two different limits or four or five, whatever, that may be possible perhaps under the first sentence. I think the second sentence has specific authority for a county over the other local governments included in whole or in part within the county. And that's the significance of the second sentence.
And I agree with Sharon.
Okay, let's leave it in then. All right, what do you got?
It was more exhausting than I'd anticipated. My other arguments, I think, are fairly straightforward. Number two in our motion for rehearing is an extension of what I talked about before in terms of granting the right of initiative. The title doesn't reflect it. In fact, in the 10 principal counties that are listed, there is no right of initiative for 2 years. I think that's more than pertinent. I think it's central. Number three was our point that the title could use clarification as to when this moratorium on permit issuance begins. And number four, I think, is maybe as important as anything else, which is that the types of petitioning procedures are specifically set forth. And to the extent that I've been unclear in the parenthetical, when I say signature sufficiency, obviously it means signature sufficiency challenges. It seems to me that those are the kinds of things that voters, because the right of initiative is fundamental and because it is now a set of petitioning procedures that are dictated rather than subject to local decision making, ought to be set forth in the title. Thank you.
And I think maybe we should refer to, you know, the setting procedures or whatever language we commonly use with regard to the initiative and referendum process. But I'm not at the point that I think we need to spell each out individually, but it does establish a new set of procedures, and that would at least tell voters.
And the title does include a phrase.
Permitting.
That it establishes procedural requirements for initiatives for local governments for this purpose, for establishing growth limits. And
right.
So I think that's sufficient rather
okay.
than getting into the business of contrasting it, that it's changing this from
right.
that.
This,
and,
yeah.
I mean, it's establishing these new procedures for this specific process of imposing a growth limit. And I think that's sufficient. But
okay. Do you have anything else, Mr. Dunn?
Unfortunately, yes.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I have one technical concern that actually just occurred to me sitting here. It refers to the citizen right of referendum to limit growth. I'm not exactly sure what that is. If it's talking about the right of referendum petition to petition something a local government does by act of council or commission, then related to growth, I'm not quite sure how that would work, but that's usually the context of citizen action with related to referendum. Obviously, a referendum in general is an action by the governmental entity. So I think there's some confusion about voters being able to act by referendum in the title. That was just a technical point. But more substantively, I can pause there if anybody needs me to.
But aren't
this the second phrase permitting county voters by initiative and referendum?
Correct.
Is that what you're referring to? Well,
to be fair, I think that's.
But that's the terminology used in sub one and sub two.
So, but
I think they're. I mean, I almost take it as the act of the vote. You can vote it in by initiative or referendum.
Once it's referred by the governmental entity, maybe that's
it. I mean, either way, it's permitting county voters to do a growth limitation, whether that's by initiative or referendum. We indicate there are new initiative standards.
Perhaps. Maybe the proponents can address that point. But more substantively, as we said in the single subject argument, I think the 1% limitation is really the central feature of the measure, and that needs to be up front. That is the affirmative result of the measure. It certainly creates a new, what I refer to as a passive right in initiative and referendum on housing growth, but that requires some other act. But the immediate impact and effect of the measure is, of course, to put the limitation on the Front Range counties. And I'll also note that in the title as drafted, it refers to limiting growth to 1% annually for years 2019 and 20. Well, that's sort of accurate, right? It limits it beyond that, absent the voters doing something. So the limitation is in perpetuity. It's not just in those 2 years. But it allows a right of initiative after 2020. And it should really be more accurately described that way. So I would move the 1% up front. And then I think it should also refer to what is in the very last clause regarding the period between the vote in January 1, 2019 as an additive clause to the 1% limitation. Those go together. In other words, I would take structurally, I think it should go the Front Range counties first and then the statewide provisions after that. And I think the single subject clause needs to reflect that, and perhaps the substance of the measure, that the home rule impact. I, again, as I said in the single subject argument, think that upsetting the apple cart on the home rule relationship is profound, and the voters need to understand that that's a fundamental change to our system of government. And right now, it's only referenced in the clause in the what we're calling the second sentence, I guess.
Mr. Dent, were you also going to address your argument about whether the two provisions, I think they appear in what is now...
The such counties and such cities and counties?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's... it was a little unclear to us whether, that was... In the measure itself, it's unclear whether it's an attempt to refer to the enumerated Front Range counties or statewide. It says no permit to build new privately owned residential housing units shall be issued within said counties, and it was unclear to us which those were. And again, I think that if it is related to the Front Range counties, then that provision in the title ought to be attached to the 1% description.
And I think at least that was my understanding of how those provisions relate, and that's why it was using the term, relating to such counties and such cities and counties. But perhaps if I could ask the proponent, Mr. Hayes, if that is in fact your intent in terms of the two provisions that just refer generally to the counties and cities and counties are ones the specifically enumerated cities and counties and counties, the Front Range group, whether that's your intent on the measure?
Yes, the said counties is referring to the counties, the cities and counties listed in Section 2.
Okay.
It could have been mentioned that it's the ones in Section 2, but when you say said counties, you're referring to ones that you've talked about At least that's my understanding. So I don't know, when you say said counties, you're not talking about every county in the state. You're being specific.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Because I do think it could be rewritten in a way to make that a little clearer. Okay. If the board's interested in going that direction, I think we could perhaps refine the title in that regard to make it clear as to which those provisions are all applying to the group of enumerated counties and cities and counties.
The only other point I want to make is as Mr. Gruskin talked about, the absolute prohibition on growth in the period prior to January 1, 2019. And I think that's something that needs to be mentioned in the title. My suggestion, again, would be to do the Front Range stuff first and then the statewide stuff second. Seems to flow perhaps better that way.
And in terms of not your last argument, but the one about right now, we just referenced that there's a limit for 2019 and 2020. I guess the way I would read that is that that's the limit. It's absolute. There'd be no way of changing it. You just have this limit for the 2 years, whether you need to go on and say without any right to changes when you're just saying this is the limit for those 2 years. And then you have the clause talking about then it can be modified after that time period.
What if we said something like permitting the 1% growth limitation to be amended or something like that, so that it's clear that the 1% continues to exist instead of such growth? I mean, maybe
I'm fine with that.
I think
the right of initiative after 2020 is the sort of the exception to the rule that 1% growth is hereby.
So maybe the permitting the 1% growth limitation to be amended or repealed.
I think ideally it would say shall allow no growth until January 1, 2019, then shall allow 1% thereafter unless voters by initiative or referendum change that limitation.
Which they can't do until 2021.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Are you interested in hearing how we might rework it in terms of making it clear that I think the last three clauses of the title just refer to the specifically enumerated cities and counties and counties.
Sure.
I think that, let's see. So right there where the cursor is on line six, at the end of line six, you would insert an and for. Then you would cut out the language limiting the growth of privately owned residential housing units in. So I think then the phrase starts, and for the city and counties of Broomfield and Denver and in the counties of Adams, Arapahoe, Boulder, Douglas, El Paso, Jefferson, Larimer, and Weld. And instead of a comma after Weld, you'd have a colon. Then you would have a number one paren limiting the growth of part. Yep, you got it. You're so good. To 1% annually for the years 2019 and 2020. Then there'd be a comma instead of a semicolon. Then I believe there'd be a two paren permitting such growth limitations, and then we can modify that further based on your suggestion after we revamp this, such growth limitations for such counties and cities and counties to be amended or repealed commencing in 2021 by initiative and referendum, comma, and three paren, prohibiting the issuance of new permits for privately owned housing units by local governments located in whole or in part within blah, blah, blah. Whether that would be helpful in making it clear that all those provisions, as I understand the proponent's intent, go for the specifically enumerated. And I don't know if Mr. Dunn has any reaction to that.
Well, I guess speaking for him, I think he probably just wants them in reverse order.
Well, I know he wants everything moved up.
Well, yeah, but even beyond that, I think he wants it to say, you know, kind of in chronological order, first we're going to prohibit the issuance of new permits, then we're going to limit the growth, and then we're going to permit, right?
Exactly.
So that it's in chronological.
Aside from sort of stylistically, that I think that's right. It sort of makes sense chronologically, and I agree that, yes, it all needs to be up front in the measure. But I really think the piece that's actually inaccurate is limiting to the years 19 and 20, because it really doesn't do that. It just allows a right of change after that, but the limitation is in perpetuity.
And I agree that concept, I'm not sure is captured in number two, because it says you can amend or repeal the limitations, but doesn't make clear, as I would want to, that those limitations stay in place after 2020 unless they're amended or repealed by initiative or referendum.
Oh. I'm not big on moving it up because I think it detracts from the fact that this has a statewide effect. But I am open to reversing the order, spelling out specifically that it's limiting growth and taking out the or making something more absolute about the 19 and 20, and then. I just think if you move it up, it gets lost on people that they start to think it's just a front range initiative, and they don't.
Yeah, I'm not inclined to move it up front. I'm trying to see if I can figure out a way to address Mr. Dunn's concern and Mr. Grusian's concern about the idea that the limit is imposed, I think, beginning in 2019, and then perhaps we modify the other phrase about permitting the 1% growth limitation to be amended or repealed,
right.
Whether that would convey the concept that it's the limit is there permanently until it's amended or repealed.
Yeah.
And well, that can only happen after 2020.
Right. I think you could say limiting the growth of privately owned 1% annually starting in the year 2019, and then you could just say permitting such growth to be repealed in 2021, and I guess people could assume that I don't know.
Are we driving you crazy?
No, he's following me.
Yeah, he's doing really well, considering. Do we have to need the year? Can we just say starting in 2019?
Oh, yeah. Do we even need to say such anymore now that we have a 1, 2, 3, or are we okay?
Meaning in number one, we could take out.
I don't know.
I don't know with that one because the in whole or in part within.
Yeah.
But perhaps.
Down in three? I don't know.
Two. Let's see, two doesn't have a, okay, so
yeah,
three.
Yeah,
just because you're referring back to the such growth, well.
Permitting growth led.
See, I think if you left the such.
Permitting growth, the 1% growth limitation.
Yes.
Okay.
Permitting the.
1%.
And whether it would be. Singular.
It's
one limit for each.
Yeah.
And then you could remove for such counties and such cities and counties.
Yeah.
Should be initiative or referendum.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Look, the terminology
is.
The measure says and. And so.
Oh.
Yeah.
I guess I'd rather track even though I'm, you know, I understand the concern about what referendum means, but the measure says referendum, and so I think we're at least true to the language of the measure. How that plays out, if it's approved by voters, I'm not sure, but.
All right.
So does that help? I think they're conferring back
there. Yeah. Do you have any comment?
Well, I have a problem with number one, beginning with prohibiting the issuance of new permits. This sentence could be left out of the ballot title completely. It's not that important. What's important is number two. And to put it first, people are going to read that and be confused about issuing new prohibiting the issuance of new permits. They only read halfway through a ballot title half the time anyway. That is not an important sentence, and it shouldn't be first. It's misleading. It's just not a good, it's just not, you know, it could be left out again. It's a minor thing. Its purpose is to prevent a feeding frenzy on permits.
If it was such a minor thing, you could have left it out of the initiative. I mean, we heard this.
As far as I'm concerned, but
yeah.
I'm looking at voters, but I just don't think it should be in first place.
I think it makes more sense to do it chronologically.
I agree.
I think it flows a little better.
So we addressed any of your concerns?
Oh, absolutely. I think the interesting parallel among 1, 2, and 3 is that the relevant time periods, the years, are at the end of 1 and 2, but not at the end of 3. So I might take in 2021 and put it after by initiative and referendum. It just makes the parallel references easier to see and read.
Okay.
I'd be fine with that.
Yeah.
To move commencing in 2021.
Yeah.
So repealed by initiative and referendum commencing then.
Yeah. All right. Anyone? Got anything else or?
No, and I know we haven't addressed the concern raised about specifying sort of both ends of the time period for the you can't issue any permits at all, but I just don't know if voters really understand the nuance of when the vote's declared, you know, when the governor signs the declaration. I mean, obviously it won't be right when the voters approve it. I mean, it's something shorter than that, but I just don't know if that's important to include. And I know in the one that was done back in 2005, 2006, it basically just said as of, you know, until this date, because it had a similar feature.
Right.
Where no permits could be issued. So I'm not inclined to make that change.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Suzanne, just for my comfort, what if this were approved by the voters in the 2018 ballot, what would that date likely be? How long from the date of the election until it's?
Well it depends if it's a recount.
So that's the declaration of voter approval. Okay.
I mean, it would be 30 days typically, but if there's a, you know.
Yeah, no, I think
if there's a recount.
Sometimes it was sometime last week, I think, that the governor signed the declaration on Amendment 71.
Yeah.
I mean, there's different dates. I mean, he signed the one for medical assisted suicide.
Yeah, he did that one a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, he did that earlier. I mean, so it just all.
Yeah. No, I agree. I don't think there's a need to address the start date.
Yeah. Okay. But those were
all right. You want me to read it, or you want to move the change?
Do you want, Steve? Can you show us in
clear for a minute?
Well, why don't I read it while we're sitting here? It's an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning limitations on the growth of housing, and in connection therewith, permitting the electors of every city, town, city and county or county to limit housing growth by initiative and referendum, permitting county voters by initiative and referendum to limit housing growth uniformly within the county,
including all or parts of local governments within the county, establishing procedural requirements for initiatives for local governments, whether statutory or home rule, concerning limits on housing growth, and for the city and counties of Broomfield and Denver, and in the counties of Adams, Arapaho, Boulder, Douglas, El Paso, Jefferson, Larimer, and Weld, one, prohibiting the issuance of new permits for privately owned housing units by local governments located in whole or in part within such counties and such cities and counties until January 1, 2019. Two, limiting the growth of privately owned residential housing units to 1% annually starting in 2019. And three, permitting the 1% growth limitation to be amended or repealed by initiative and referendum commencing in 2021.
If you could flip it back to the changes, I think I could maybe make a motion. I'll try. Because I think it should be that I would move that we deny the motions for rehearing. In terms of Mr. Dunn's arguments in Roman 2 and 3, and Mr. Grusin's arguments in B, that we deny them other than to the extent that we've modified the title as shown on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Okay. That takes us to the fiscal impact. Doesn't
it? The fun part.
Yeah. Who wants to go first on that one?
Jason Dunn again. So Mr. Gruskin has, I think, a little bit more intricate arguments that we'll incorporate into ours as well. Ours are more overarching, I think, in that the abstract, I do think the abstract needs to actually contain a number, an estimate, or the fiscal impact statement as well. But more specifically, I think what's important is that with the limitation that's in place, that the economic impact, I understand that there is an indeterminate component to this and that it's hard to specify an exact impact, but I think there's some impacts that are unavoidable and with these limitations on, and it doesn't discuss the impacts that will happen if there is a near cessation of housing construction in the metro area, limited to 1% or less. And I think those economic impacts need to be stated at the front end, whether that's in terms of job loss and population increase and the economic impacts that result from that. But I think to simply say, well, on the one hand, there could be some loss of construction jobs, but on the other hand, property values could go up, and it's neither here nor there, I think doesn't really adequately describe what are the obvious and unavoidable economic impacts of the measure.
Okay.
Do you have a sense in any of the 10 cities and counties or counties what the historical housing growth rate has been?
I don't. Mr. Gruskin represents the Housing Association, so he may be able to answer that, but I don't know the actual number. I know there's a heck of a lot of people moving into the Front Range, so I would assume that housing growth is proportionate. In fact, the proponents can probably answer that. So.
Mr. Gruskin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have an answer to that question offhand, but legislative staff probably maybe does. I think the arguments that we've set forth are fairly self-evident. The statute requires this abstract to state whether or not the fiscal impact statement to state whether there's a fiscal impact of the measure, and there is no such statement, and so it's deficient in that regard. The local government and revenue spending has basically no either existing or projected estimates, so it's really just a non-informative narrative. And like Mr. Dunn, I appreciate the challenges here, but the statute was fairly clear as to what needed to be provided. Paragraph entitled Limits on Housing Permits will also impact the distribution of various types of employment and economic activity doesn't really say anything. And the notion that local government may receive additional property tax revenue, I suppose, is a guess of some sort. It doesn't suggest any sort of parameter, and it doesn't acknowledge that there are Tabor limits that will restrict property tax growth. And I'll just go on to my arguments in D. Really, the statement of the abstract falls short. There are no estimates of recurring expenditures. There's no statement of the measure's economic benefits as required, and there's no estimate of fiscal liabilities if it's enacted. So there are certain boxes that were checked and certain, but not adequately in our view, and there are certain boxes that were not checked at all, and we believe that that is contrary to what the statute requires. Thank you.
Do you have anything you want to say about the impact?
I don't think an accurate figure can be established since this would be the first. There are some limits, some places and some cities, but something with this this mammoth effect has never been done as far as I know. Rapid growth raise, you know, I'm a real estate broker. Rapid growth increases the price of land, schools, and roads. There doesn't seem to be adequate money for roads or schools at this time. We're always hearing about, you know, either bond issues or statewide to increase money for schools. Houses pay, according to the Gallagher Amendment, a low property tax for land and, vacant land, businesses and commercial have to pay a higher tax rate. That discourages. We've had big companies move out of the state. You can see it in Seattle where you have so much traffic and other problems. Big companies.
Well, do you have any comment on what legislative council put together in terms of an impact?
Well, I just think there's things that are not here. If you're going to scrutinize this then you need to cover a lot of areas that probably haven't been. So,
I mean, do you agree with this?
I don't think an accurate figure can be.
But that, so does that mean you agree with what they put together in the?
I think it's about as good as you can do.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Let's hear from legislative.
I'd love to hear from legislative council staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the title board. Todd Harriet with legislative council staff. I think in terms of the fiscal impact statement that we put together for this measure, we were following the guidance in the statute that directs us to prepare that statement and the various elements within it. I think I would point out that there's language in the statute that talks about it should be substantially similar in form and content to the fiscal notes that's provided by our office for legislation that's introduced during the session. So we tend to get a lot of bills that are difficult to determine a precise fiscal impact for a measure. And so there's all kinds of fiscal notes out there that we could point to where we've got an indeterminate expenditure increase for state government or an indeterminate expenditure change for local governments. Similarly, on the revenue side, sometimes it's difficult to predict exactly what those numbers will look like. Sometimes we'll try to put together a range or a minimum or a maximum. So there's a lot of different circumstances in which it makes it difficult for us to come up with a precise estimate. And so in this particular measure here, and Larson Silbaugh, who is the analyst who put this together for us, can talk more specifically about that if you'd like. But, you know, I think the challenge for us was trying to determine in these Front Range counties, which ones are going to, is this 1% growth limitation going to be binding or not? And that can have different impacts on both property values and construction and employment and so on. So I think our feeling was there's no way to get a precise estimate to put down on this.
Any questions?
I have a couple of questions. Being familiar with legislative fiscal notes, and as you said, a lot of times you say that the impact is indeterminate, and yet in the abstract and in the statement itself, you don't really use that terminology. I mean, you refer to sort of it's likely, it may happen, those sorts of things, but you never go that additional step and say, but the impact is indeterminate. Is there a reason that you didn't do that?
I'm not really sure why we didn't, you know, come out and say that. I think we're trying to say, depending on whether this constraint is binding in certain communities or counties, it would have this type of effect. If it's not binding, then it's going to have a different effect. The combined impact is what we couldn't determine what that net impact was going to look like.
Okay. And the other thing, and maybe.
Madam Chair and members of the title board, Larson Silbaugh, fiscal or economist for Colorado Legislative Council staff. And we're also writing this from the perspective of a statewide impact rather than just the 10 counties. And so to the extent that there is a binding limit on these 10 counties, there could be growth in Elizabeth or in Elbert County or in Clear Creek County. And so from a statewide perspective, we never made the assumption that this would reduce the amount of overall construction in the state or overall population growth. And so I think that's one of the difficulties we had was, you know, looking at it from a state perspective, is this would be a statewide measure versus, you know, trying to get into the details for everything that would happen at every single one of these 10 counties, as well as the local municipalities within the county. So I just wanted to add that to what Todd said.
I appreciate that. Don't go too far for a second. Several of the arguments made in the motions for rehearing, the statute is very specific, and I'm referring to 140.105.5. Subsection 3 regarding the abstract, that the abstract must include very specific list of items. I would argue that I don't think the title board has jurisdiction to deal with the fiscal impact statement, even though I think Mr. Gruskin made an argument regarding the sufficiency of the fiscal impact statement, because as I read 140.107, when we're dealing with motions for rehearing, it only talks about motions for rehearing regarding the abstract. And so I don't think the title board has any authority to tell legislative council anything about their fiscal impact statement per se. But in regard to the abstract, I would find it helpful for you to sort of walk us through the abstract regarding sort of the laundry list of items in subsection 3 of 105.5 and pointing out sort of, you know, that A, the estimate of the effect of the measure that on state and local government revenues, expenditure, taxes, that this is that portion of the abstract. I mean, I think that would just be helpful in understanding how you view the items required and where they appear in your abstract, if that's possible.
Sorry.
Larson Silva, again, with Legislative Council staff. So looking at the abstract, it requires an estimate of the effect the measure will have on state and local government revenues, expenditures, taxes, and fiscal liabilities if the measure is enacted. Our intent was for the paragraph with the subhead local government revenue and spending to communicate that there would in fact be less revenue from building permits and then an expenditure impact from less services provided. So just as a summary of that paragraph.
Okay.
For the abstract is also required to provide a statement of the measure's economic benefits for all Coloradans. And our attempt to meet that requirement is in the paragraph entitled Economic Impacts, where we can't say conclusively whether this would be what the economic impacts would be for all Coloradans. You know, it depends on your individual economic circumstances, whether you're a homeowner, whether you're a landlord, whether you're looking to move into one of these 10 Front Range counties. And so because we can't identify an impact for all Coloradans, we tried to provide a narrative just explaining that there are going to be impacts, you know, in terms of jobs and population growth, and it really depends on your economic circumstances what the impact would be on you. The abstract is also required to include an estimate of the amount of any state and local government recurring expenditures or fiscal liabilities in the measure enacted. We believe that the paragraph entitled local government revenue and spending beginning in fiscal year 2018-19 conveys that there are going to be ongoing expenditure and revenue impacts from the measure. The other requirement in statute is for any initiated measure that modifies the state tax laws, an estimate, if feasible, of the impact of average taxpayer the measure enacted. This isn't a tax measure, so we didn't include that. And then E, you know, the following statement, the abstract includes estimates of fiscal impact, and that's that first paragraph in the abstract.
Okay, that's very helpful. One question about the requirement in 3B, which in the statute it says a statement of the measure's economic benefits for all Coloradans. To me, economic benefits means something different than economic impacts, and this goes to argument that both Mr. Gruskin and Mr. Dunn have made in terms of sort of some of the potential negative impacts. Economic impacts haven't been adequately reflected, and I'm curious as to why you use the terminology economic impacts and included negative, because to me benefits means positive and not negative, and whether there was any discussion about that.
Todd Harriet again with Legislative Council staff. I think we took the position that we were interpreting that as economic impacts as opposed to economic benefits. For one, I guess our feeling was it's hard to find or to define exactly what that term exactly means from our standpoint. So since we write fiscal notes for legislation, again, we're trying to decipher sort of what the economic impacts of this measure would be, both positive and negative, in terms of property values or changes there, changes in construction and employment, but not really just focusing on what are the positive economic benefits.
But the terminology in the statute is economic benefits. I mean,
right.
Okay. Thank you.
Any questions? No. All right. Well, I mean, I tend to agree. I think it would be impossible to actually come up with, I think they called it an accurate estimate. I think even an inaccurate estimate would be difficult under this initiative. I mean, it has to do with what the growth would be anyway, what the economy is doing, whether the voters voted in or voted out, whether it's one home rule or just part of some other city. So I'm not inclined to change any of it. I don't think we could
we may be able to get an impact on what it would cost for that time period where there's a moratorium, but then we'd have to know how long the moratorium was going to be. So, I mean, even limited to that tiny little piece of it, we couldn't even estimate that because we don't know whether it would be 1 month, 2 months, 6 weeks. So I'm not inclined to change it at all.
I agree. I think it'd be helpful to know what the growth has been, particularly in the 10 counties or city and counties at issue, because, you know, if, for example, it had been 5%, then I think you could reasonably project that it would have a very significant impact. To limit that to 1%, but I don't have that information. I don't know that it needs to be included.
And, you know, I just want to note for the record that, you know, this is a matter of first impression for the title board. This is an entirely new process this cycle, and I think we're all doing our best to try to figure out what it means. I'm sure we'll probably hear from the court at some point in terms of what it means. And having dealt with fiscal notes from the legislative perspective, I understand the difficulties of coming up with precise numbers. I know in many cases it's not possible. I sort of do wonder whether or not it would be helpful to at least, you know, include the concept of, you know, that it's an indeterminate amount in terms of the impacts as described. I do have a problem with the last paragraph of the abstract in terms of being economic impacts rather than benefits. I think I understand in terms of the direction of the fiscal impact statement, which is controlled by other portions of 105.5, and it's supposed to be similar to the legislative fiscal notes, and those generally balance both the positive and negative economic impacts of a measure. I think there's significance to the fact that 3B only talks about economic benefits. And so I think that the heading on that paragraph should be changed. And I think that the second sentence should be removed. I know that both Mr. Gruskin and Mr. Dunn in their motions for rehearing made arguments that the sort of the negative impact needed to be clarified. And to me, as a benefit, I don't think the negative impact should be included at all. And if anything, the last sentence, which they focus on, I think that it should be changed just to reflect that perhaps construction, employment, retail, trade, and population may increase in communities where there are not binding growth limits, because that would be perhaps a positive for those communities in terms of if it's true that housing growth would actually shift, for example, outside the Front Range area specified in the measure. But I just think that that the abstract is supposed to include certain things. I appreciate the delineation that the heading local government revenue and spending includes the requirements of 3A and 3C, and that economic impact paragraph is supposed to incorporate 3B, but I just don't think that it's doing what the terminology of the statute is requiring. But that's just giving some meaning to the term benefit. Obviously, it was used for a reason rather than economic impacts, and so I'm just trying to stay true to the statutory language.
I appreciate that. I would probably look at it slightly differently. I would view it as needing to discuss net benefits, which I think you can't do without taking into account some of the costs that would be imposed. You know, perhaps the title should, you know, maybe economic economic impacts is not strictly the correct title for the paragraph, but I think you can't discuss the benefits and ignore costs. I think to accurately address benefits, you need to address net benefits, which would include a discussion of costs.
Yeah, and I think I tend to agree with that. I mean, there's no requirement that they delineate it out the way the statute says. It's just what has to be in it. And I think that, you know, some of these paragraphs are bleeding into the other, and I don't see any problem with that. But I think you can't just say, you know, here are benefits. And, oh, by the way, you don't have to pay anything. I mean, to obtain a benefit, you need to know what the cost was to see what the benefit is. So I think that I don't really have any issues with the way it was drafted. You want to make a motion on the rehearing then, Glenn?
On the abstract?
On the abstract.
I move for initiative 4 that we deny the motions for rehearing with respect to the abstract.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. All right. I think that's everything. It's a long hearing. That concludes the rehearing. The time is 3:50, and we are adjourned.